Bam, 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 bam. Welcome to an all-new episode of Marty Talks, the podcast that's bringing you all things political drag and pop culture, produced by Purse First Productions, Bob the Drag Queen, and Mitch Farino. At the time of this recording, it is the day of the second impeachment vote happening in the House. So by the time you listeners are receiving this, we will know whether Donald Trump has been impeached for a second time or not. History making, his fascist, racist rhetoric and coup has led to even more divisions within our country. But we are gearing up for another inauguration, a new administration, and hopefully making real changes across our government for equitability and equality. So I'm excited to welcome our guest today, who is at the forefront of trailblazing for equality in film and television, the one and only, bam, 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 welcome Tommy Dorfman to the show. Hey, Tommy.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. You know, as I just mentioned, at the time of this recording, we are watching the second House vote on impeachment. You know, last week, that incredibly violent coup happened, and it's just, there's so, I can't stop watching MSNBC.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm not watching MSNBC because I have to prioritize my mental health and sanity right now. I'm getting the news as I'm needed to receive it, if that makes sense. Absolutely. I, of course, was glued to the television on the day of the attempted coup, which a lot of people seem to have forgotten that that happened. So I'm glad that we're still talking about it, reminding people that white supremacist Nazis did try to take over and potentially blow up the Capitol building and take people hostage. So yeah, I mean, I was glued to the television at that point, but I got really frustrated because I felt like the news was not talking about this and representing it accurately as it was happening. They were still referring to it as a protest instead of riot for a very long time. Yeah. So I actually had to turn it off at a certain point and remind myself that the news, at least in America, is there to keep you watching at the end of the day, not necessarily there to report the news. So I needed to take some time away. And weirdly enough, I feel like Twitter was the space to really have discourse around what was going on. And that's when I felt like people were taking it seriously, and I was able to both educate myself and provide resources to other people who follow me, who think of me as a vocal, outspoken person, you know, and amplify the voices that needed to be amplified during that time, not necessarily the scripts that were being read on the news. So,
because that's what it is on the news, right? It is a script. And so we need to get actual information. We need to call it what it is. It was a Nazi fascist coup. AOC did a live last night on Instagram so we're recording this on January 13th for reference, listeners. But last night, AOC did an Instagram live where she even said that she was scared for her life, not only because the people were breaking into the Capitol, but she was scared that QAnon Congress members, newly elected members of Congress, would share her location.
Yeah.
Which is like mind-blowing that elected leaders in the Capitol are actively participating in this and now defending it.
My mind, frankly, isn't blown. I think I'm actually just not. This week has been a lot of not being surprised by anything. Weirdly, because I have been feeling this. It's been in the works for a long time, and people have been talking about it, both on the internet and off. So
I will say, like, social media, you know, I'm happy that they're banning people. I'm happy they banned Trump, but like too little too late, right? Like, this is like, they could have banned this shit years ago, and they didn't.
Precisely. Yeah. And so I'll be curious to see, sort of moving forward, how this all continues to unfold. I have zero expectations at this point because it seems like, you know, water seeks its own level and the level keeps getting dropped. And I'm sort of just trying to practice gratitude for what we do have right now, and
honey, we got to practice gratitude,
hopefulness. And
like, we have to practice self-care, mental health care, spiritual health care. Take care. Like it's so important. It's so easy to get caught up in, like, I'm going to stare at the news all day, which I do a lot, but taking time to, like, have that extra glass of water, go for a run if you can, do something for yourself, eat the damn piece of cake if you want.
Right. No, 100%. And then I think, you know, conserving your energy for moments when we're really needed. And, like, if you're a person who is called to action, like I am, reminding yourself that this is, and I've said this before and I'll continue to say this, and it's something I heard from somebody else, this is not my idea, right? When thinking about any type of liberation movement, sorry, something's vibrating, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, hold on, I have to pause. My drag daughters are texting me non-stop.
No worries.
God. Hold on, I gotta tell them I'm recording a podcast on my phone. Stop texting. Okay. All right. I just texted them to stop texting for like 30 minutes. Oh, these drag daughters, they want to put together a music video, which I'm very excited about, but we gotta, just hold off. But anyway, I'm so happy that you are so active, and I've always admired that about you. Like, you've been given this incredible platform with an incredible body of work. And because of that, you have so many people following you and your career and what you're doing. And I just really think it's incredible how you've taken this platform and you've used it to highlight important issues that are impacting. You know, one of the things, you know, I work at the Ellie Forney Center a lot, and I know that you work with them a lot, and I just think it's really incredible. Have you always been political or engaged in social activism?
I wouldn't say I'm a political person, because I'm not. I'm an artist who cares about human rights and equality, which does intersect with politics when it has to, but I will never involve myself politically. I will support politicians that I feel we have the potential to hold accountable and could hopefully foster and invest in change for this country for the better, who will fight for certain equality acts, things like that, to be passed. And so I do lend my voice and help amplify people like John Ossoff or Reverend Warnock, or, you know, making sure that we are fighting against certain DAs like Jackie Lacey and getting her out of office in Los Angeles, because they aren't doing their jobs to protect the community and protect people at large. But I'm not a particularly political person. I just am incredibly invested in the well-being of my peers and my loved ones and humanity. And I believe that we as a race are not reaching our potential in so many ways, and have been a disservice to this planet and to one another for a long time. And, you know, and in a very selfish way, like, I want to be able to use whatever bathroom I want, right? And so, like,
right. Well, I mean, there's
people who are going to support that, and I want to be able to go home to Georgia and not feel unsafe as a trans person there. So there's a lot of, like, there are, of course, things like that, but I try not to refer to myself as an activist or as like a person who's involved in politics, because I'm an advocate and an amplifier of voices, and I do a lot of work when it comes to, you know, phone banking, text banking, protesting, and that's been part of my blood and body and spirit for many, many years prior to ever having a platform, right? I've been doing that kind of organizing work and participating on that level. But, you know, first and foremost, I'm an artist and a storyteller.
And that's so great. Like, just like being engaged in that. I love that you brought up the use of bathrooms, because I feel like a lot of people, you know, like we heard a lot about it when it was going on in North Carolina and other places, but even in a place like New York, I mean, this just passed, like, a bill. It was Danny O'Donnell and Julia Salazar, state assembly member and state senator, who put through a bill to, make it so all, like, you know, single-use restrooms in the city are labeled, like, gender non-conforming, gender queer, like, gender neutral. bathrooms, but that was like even something in New York, and then requiring spaces to have those bathrooms in them. And we often think like, oh, New York, like they're like leading the way, but even states like ours are just now in 2021 putting through legislation that can help our trans and non-binary and genderqueer communities. So we have a lot of like, we've come a long way, but we have a long way to go.
Completely.
there's I'm not sure if you've like heard about this, but there's a thing, you know, I identify as non-binary as well. And there's a, in New York, there's something called district leaders, you know, which are very hyper-local elected positions, but they're elected as the male district leader and the female district leader. Mm-hmm. And so in Brooklyn, they just got it changed. So it's like any gender. And now we're trying in Manhattan to have that. But it's so archaic to me that we're still like labeling things in this way.
Yeah, it really is. And I think like even the fact that the Equality Act is sort of on, was on the ballot still, right? It's extremely frustrating and saddening that LGBTQ people, Black people, BIPOC people, women are not safe from discrimination.
Sorry. Okay. So Mitch, while editing, we're picking up from here. So we were just talking about, you know, the use of pronouns within our bathrooms and our government. And I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about your work studying on 13 Reasons Why. And how do you think that show, I loved that show. How do you think that that show and your role in it kind of impacted like pop culture in the last, you know, couple of years?
I think the show opened doors for a different level of filmmaking as it pertains to teen soap operas at the end of the day, and obviously started conversations around mental health that have continued to be influential and important in this country, and spread awareness around those issues. I think my role on that show was very much continuing a legacy of queer characters in television and continuing to push the needle forward little by little to make sure that the doors are being opened more and more for other, and we've seen that even like since my show, since the show that I was on for a couple of years, there's been an exponential increase in LGBTQ representation. And I don't think that has anything to do necessarily with my with the character I played or like we were part of a continuation of something that was already very much put in place and that people had spent decades and decades working on in entertainment and in television. So I feel really grateful and honored to hold a small amount of space in that world and continue the legacy that others started before me. And it's definitely informed the types of jobs I've taken since then and the work that I'm doing now in a lot of ways, and thinking about how there is an intersection to be found between entertainment and evolution and inspiration and being helpful to people and opening people's eyes and educating people through storytelling, which I've always fundamentally believed. But I think seeing that in practice and be so successful commercially got me really excited and has continued to inspire me to this day.
Yes, I just say, like, I know, like, growing up when I was younger, and we're around the same age, so like I remember, like, when I was younger, the only references I had on TV were Wilson Cruz was on the season of My So-Called Life, which was amazing, but then we had Will and Grace, and that was really the only representation. And so now it's like I'm so excited that people are seeing genderqueer, non-binary, trans characters portrayed in a positive way on TV. They're not like being referenced as the butt of the joke, but they're like real substantive storylines. And I just think, I mean, it is an evolution, right? Like it has taken, like you said, like years and years of work within the industry to get to a place where we're having programming that is more inclusive. And I want to know, like, you're from Georgia, where thank God we just like took this Senate back, like with a lot of hard work. But I wanted to know, have you, like, when you go home to visit and engage with people, have you felt a shift because of what's happening in the on television within, like, characters? Have you seen people's viewpoints start to change around how they engage or interact or talk about people?
I think having things like television and media as like links we can share with people who don't understand takes the burden off of trans and queer people having to explain themselves all the time. So that can be really, really beneficial and helpful. And these types of tools, as they become more available and widely spread, definitely have a trickle down effect of opening, of educating folks. And I think in time, certainly leading to less discrimination and more compassion for queer folks. Specifically in Atlanta, I think there's a lot of things that's contributed to this blue wave. I think in part, you know, Georgia, Atlanta has become one of the largest, if not the largest, producing city for film and television in this country. And with that, there has been an influx and a wave of coastal folks moving there and permanently residing there over the past 5 years. So that just changes the landscape entirely of the city.
Yeah, changing the demographics.
Yeah, it's changing the demographics of the city. I think the work that Stacey Abrams has done, obviously down there, in engaging voters is exponential and incredibly moving and impressive. And again, it's exemplary of how setting a long-term goal can pay off if you stay dedicated to that.
She needs the medal. They need to give her the Medal of Freedom. I mean, she's incredible.
I'm sure they will.
I hope so. The Medal of Freedoms that Trump is giving out are shit. So I can't wait for Biden to give them to people who actually deserve them and have done the work, not Rush Limbaugh, but people who really are actual heroes in our
for sure. country.
Oh, I'm ready. I'm counting down the days till this inauguration. Like, let's go, girl. I am ready.
A week away.
It's just like, I don't know. I have so much fear because of what's happened in the last 4 years, but I also have so much hope because of people like Stacey Abrams, because there's like these young kids. Like, I'm sure you like get this a lot also. Like, I have young kids like messaging me in my Instagram inbox like all the time, like, oh my God, I can't believe like there's somebody in politics who's like me. I never knew like a drag queen or non-binary person could do this. And I'm like, yes, this is for everyone. Let's go, you know? And the next generation like gives me so much hope for our country.
Totally. I feel that as well. But then also I think we have to remember that a lot of that generation on TikTok is extremely conservative and bigoted. So we cannot rest too easy or be too comforted by, I mean, I love the support that I receive as well. And I think the work that you're doing is invaluable, and the type of space that you're holding is incredibly inspiring to especially young people who are inclined to involve themselves in politics and drag and don't fall on the binary of gender. And all of that is so meaningful. But again, like, I think sometimes our optimism can get in our own way, and like remembering that this generation of people that we keep saying like, is going to die out and, you know, we're going to rise to the top has also been breeding a generation that we just don't see as much because with the way that analytics work and social media works, we're presented with, for the most part, stuff that's aligned with our beliefs and our viewpoint, right? And so what does it mean to fight for, I've been doing a lot of, like, perhaps an unhealthy amount at times, investigative work on my own, looking at the other side and trying to better understand them as people. Because I think it's important
to see where they're coming
from as well. Yeah, and again, it's inherited, just like my parents who happen to be liberal, for the most part, maybe not as left as I am, more centrist for sure, but they set the groundwork and the framework for me to flourish into the person I am today, thus, helping to inspire, other people and younger generations within my family, and that all spreads out in its own way. But the same thing is happening in, rural America
On the other
on the
side
other
of it,
side. And so
yeah.
I think I do have a lot of hope for this next generation, but I also have a lot of rightfully a concern and fear about the conservative side of this generation and the radicalization that they have been taught, and how that, we cannot forget that 30 million people, believe that. I mean, I might be wrong statistically, but and you can check me on that, or editor check me on this, but believe that this election was tampered with or rigged, right? And those people have children. And
Yeah,
so,
I mean, and that's what
and
Trump's
these
capital,
people, I'm
right?
also seeing, young people engage with my content recently that don't think what they did at the Capitol was wrong at all. If anything, they want more of that, right? Or we have the Dylann Roofs of the world. So let's not forget about that. And while I'm excited about the next generation, I'm also extremely nervous and cautious.
There's fears around it. That is such a good point because, you brought up TikTok, and I feel like the analytics of it show you, when I'm scrolling TikTok, it's primarily going to be content that I want to see, right? It's going to be drag queens doing makeup and people doing funny, anti-Trump videos or whatever. But there's a whole nother world of social media that analytics aren't showing me because that's not the content that I follow. So you're so right in that. How do you think, how do we, it, you know, like, we all have conservative family members, right? Well, for them, I can't speak for everybody, but a lot of us have conservative family members. How do we break the mold for this generation? How do you think we get the messaging across for these young kids who are thinking, like you're saying, coming onto your platform, saying, like, yeah, what happened to the, I want more of that. How do we break that cycle?
I don't know right now in this moment.
Yeah, I mean, right? Like, this is the thing. It's
But
like
I think being more
it's
mindful and strategic is going to be helpful. I think we're living in a world currently that's extremely fast-paced and exceptionally radicalized. But I think more and more, based just on watching Trump get kicked off of all these social media platforms, I think more and more restrictions are going to be put in place, and so there's going to be a need to be just more strategic and mindful moving forward, and how we choose to amplify voices and act on things, and what does it mean to reinvest. I think because of this pandemic, a lot obviously is happening online, and we've seen a beautiful amount of innovation over the course of the last few months when it comes to supporting things politically and socially. And what does it mean when the world opens back up again to get back down to the grassroots of it all?
Yeah, and I think with the online stuff that you're talking about, we're going to really need to hold our companies accountable into fact-checking more and sooner. Like we talked about earlier, like it took years for them to start labeling Trump's stuff as lies. And not just him, but other people on Twitter. So we need to really hold these companies accountable to make sure we're really, doing the due diligence to fact check, because it's so easy on social media to just retweet something that could be completely a lie.
Yeah, 100%.
There's no basis. So
100%.
that's where a lot of, I think the fear comes in. But I want to talk a little bit, I don't want to get too heavy down in the politics. I want to have some fun also. So what you have a relationship with Drag Race, which is a new season out just passed.
There is.
You've been a judge on the show. I this new season, okay, because this is the thing. You talk about practicing self-care, mental health care, spiritual health care. And part of that for me is sometimes just like turning on reality TV and numbing out for a little bit, because it is like the world is heavy. And so I'm so grateful for this new season of Drag Race, which is out. We have Tina Burner from New York City, Olivia Lux, who else is it? Rosé from New York. It's a great season. What are your thoughts on the, did you watch the episode where they they were messing around with the girls with how they get eliminated.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, my thought was, oh, they shot this during the pandemic and there were probably guidelines to how many people they could have in a room. So I'm sure they had to make some changes. And it was interesting because it was a different way of getting to know people than we're used to. And like anything, I think it's worth trying new ways. And yeah, it's been fun to watch. I definitely have my favorites. The only New York girl I really love is Tina, to be honest. And I think this season's all about Atlanta, as always, where I'm from.
Yeah.
However, I'm really here for Simone and I'm really here for Gottmik.
Oh my God. Simone is stunning. The facial expressions, the acting beats in the lip sync. I was like,
yeah, I mean, she's the one.
She is the moment. She is the one.
Her and Gottmik are the ones. Yes, I think Rosé's attitude is like so hard for me to watch on television. Like, she's just so self-involved and clearly like narcissistic in her drag. At least that's a personality that's being portrayed, and I really have no patience for that. I think like the days of like getting away with that, well, also like one, you have to like really be good. So it's like when Violet Chachki was being like really bitchy and confident, she also was sitting on the bag because she like knew that she was the one.
Like, whereas she was like, this is mine in the bag. I'm like, give me the crown.
Yeah. Like she, and you know, and it was also like, she did it in such a way where you could tell that she was self-aware. Whereas like you're watching Rosé do it and you're like, oh, this is like a really fame hungry, like narcissistic person who like thinks that she deserves everything. That's my hot take.
The hot take of the day. I'll say,
sorry if you're friends.
She is a friend of mine. She's a good queen. She does it. But I think when you go, like, I mean, I've not been on the show, but I think when you go on maybe like, that adrenaline and anxiety can make you, and I'm not
can manifest that in like being, yeah, maybe. I'm sure. I would literally never put myself in that position to be on a show like that, other than to continue to guest judge, which is so much fun. It's like the best 2 days of my life, honestly, doing All Stars.
Did you do the love match one, right?
I did Snatch Game, yeah. It was
Snatch
super
Game,
fun.
Yeah. Oh my God. Would Juju be?
Yeah, I mean, class? I would guest judge at any point, like whenever. It's just such, but you know, the reality is like that show's really intense. Like they are there to work and to win. It's really incredible to see the innovation and the star power that is Simone. To me, she is just like all the girls are amazing in their own way, shape, form. I think it's going to be a really stiff competition. I'm just really, really so impressed and awed and in love with also her energy and her. She's such a light. So has Gottmik. Like I'm really attracted to people who are light, who aren't, you know, who don't. And that's across the board in my life. So I'm always rooting for the folks who like know what they're doing, can serve it all, but like don't.
They're bringing it,
and like don't need to put other people down along the way.
I mean, that's the thing. Like for me, drag is joyful, right? Like I find such joy in doing drag, and so when I'm watching the show, I'm like, I'm honed in on who is bringing joy. I love Tamisha Iman, who is like joyful. We only saw her so far at the time of this recording on like the one episode. But there's this video of her when she said, when her and Simone were up, right? And she's like, I've been doing drag for 30 years. And you could tell Simone was like, oh, this is a legend. Like, you know, and like was like showed such respect for her. And then I went back and watched this video of her performing in a pageant in 1996. Where she, I'm going to text you the link to this video. She turns the fucking party. Like, y'all need to go and watch Tamisha Iman performing in 1996 at this pageant. She slays. I have so much respect for her. And Candy Muse is made for television.
100%.
I'm obsessed with Candy Muse. made for television.
I mean, completely hilarious, incredible, like, keeps me on my toes and laughing the most.
We need that.
I think she's going to be on for a while, is my guess.
Yeah, I think she's going to be on for a while. I feel like
Candy, Simone, and Gottmik and Tina are going to be on for a while.
I hope. Fingers crossed, girl. I'm ready. I'm excited.
And Tina, to me is not fucking around.
Have you seen her live in person?
I haven't.
When we're reopening, you're not... back in New York, I'm taking you to a Tina Burner show.
Oh, please do. Whenever that happens.
Whenever that happens.
I would be so thrilled.
I produced a TV show a couple years ago called Shade Queens, and she was one of our cast members. And my husband's her musical director for her cabaret shows. She is...
Oh, cool.
She is wild. She's a monster, and I love her.
I mean... We love to see
it. Oh my gosh. Well, I can't wait to have you back on the show as a judge. I can't wait to see you back on the show. Like,
same, from your lips to God's ears.
It will happen. It will happen.
For sure.
But I just want to say thank you so much again for just like being you and fighting the good fight, like you said. Like, I love that you talked about earlier, like, even before, you know, television, all that stuff, you were like using your voice to give back. And I want our viewers or our listeners rather to take away from that. Like, whether you have one follower or a million followers, you can be involved in the change that we so desperately need. So thank you for highlighting that and for just being you and helping Ali Fournier Center. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so grateful for your voice in this fight.
I'm so grateful for you, and thank you for doing the real work day to day in the city, advocating for change door to door. It's incredibly admirable, and I don't know where we'd be without folks like you.
Thanks, babe. Well, we're in this together, and I can't wait till
we are.
I can't wait till we're all vaccinated and I can see you in person again.
For sure. Please stay safe out there, and I will most definitely see you when I'm back in New York.
Yes, my love. Be well. And everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Money Talk. Stay tuned for all new episodes produced by Purse First Productions, Bob the Drag Queen, and Mitch Farino. Until next time, spread love and don't be a dick.